नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ 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 नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय.
This morning we'll cover one verse text. Verse 1, which is Kapilade's response to Devabhuti's question. In the purport of the previous verse, Prabhupada has summarized really nicely what her question is. I'll read that little section at first. In a paraphrased fashion, the main doubt or question that Devabhuti has is how by the discrimination process that Sankhya Yoga requires, how by understanding we belong to the category of spirit and not to the category of matter, and whatever detachment comes from that, how is it possible to literally extract the soul from the influences of matter? Knowledge alone is not enough. How does it work? And a more subtle point, I hope you caught it, if I just review it quickly. Prabhupada explains that the question that she's asking arises from a concept of void philosophy. That is to say, What is life, or what is consciousness? It's a combination of matter, and when the soul separates from the body, and the body separates from the soul, the body has no meaning, the soul has no meaning. You have a state of nothingness. Not so, but that's the doubt that she has. And so, to dispel the doubt, what Kapila Dev points to bhakti, or devotional service. And one of the themes that I was trying to present yesterday is a little complicated, but from analysis to meditation on super soul, the process of Satyuga Dhyana meditation. Meditation on what? Meditation on super soul. Super soul is the controller of both matter and spirit. It's in this superlative position. And meditating upon super soul, carrying out one's duties in the world in a mood of detachment, respecting all living entities equally, not favoring one, or disliking the other, very similar to Krishna's position. Namidvesho stina priyana. That's the life of a progressive transcendentalist in Satyuga. And then moving into the realm of bhakti, which is what Kapila Dev's answer is. So, hearing all of that, Devabhuti's question is, even with that, how does the soul become extricated from the implication of involvement with matter? The cause is still there. Waves of the ocean of material existence are still moving. The modes of nature are moving. Karma is still moving. Material entity, allure of the material enjoyment is still there, even if one is in this detached position. Striving for this kind of position. I'll just read the verses again, 17 through 20. Devahuti inquired, "My dear Brahman, does material nature ever give release to the spirit soul? Since one is attracted to the other eternally, how is their separation possible? As there is no separate existence of the earth and its aroma, or of water and its taste, there cannot be any separate existence of intelligence and consciousness," that is to say. This is a mechanistic science notion also. What is consciousness? It's matter. Different combinations of matter, we call it consciousness. Just as aroma is inextricable from earth, or taste is inextricable from water, consciousness and intellect are inextricable from matter. They're a product of matter. They're concomitant with matter. That's your doubt. Hence, even though he is the passive performer of all activities, that's again his neutral state of not being attached, but performance of duty. Oh goodness, you do something because it's duty. You're to do it. Therefore you do it. Not because there's an attachment to the result, but there's a higher principle operating in one's life. And as a transcendentalist, passive performs nice avkartu, the non-doer. Although doing is the non-doer, passive performer. How can there be freedom? Even though he's a passive performer of all activities, how can there be freedom of the soul as long as the material nature acts on him and binds him? Where's the release from bondage? And her last is, even if the great fear of bondage is avoided by mental speculation and inquiry into the fundamental principles, that's the previous chapter, fundamental principles of material nature. You understand how matter moves, how the cause and effect of material nature. And you identify yourself not with that, but with spirit. It may still appear again, since its cause has not ceased. And I'll read the purport. Sure. Material bondage is caused by putting oneself under the control of matter. Because of the false ego lording it over material nature. The lording it over material nature verse that Prabhupada quotes from Bhagavad Gita is chapter 7, text 27. Icha Dvesha Samudhima. Then he goes on explaining. Icha means desire. Desire to lord it over material nature. Or to be as great as the Supreme Lord. Everyone desires to be the greatest personality in this material world. Dvesha means envy. When one becomes envious of God's Supreme Personality, God, everyone thinks, why should Krishna be all in all? I'm as good as Krishna. These two items, desire to be the Lord, the imitation purusha, the enjoyer of God's energy, and dvesha, envy of the Lord, are the beginning cause of material bondage. As long as a philosopher, a salvationist, or a voidist has some desire to be supreme, to be everything, or to deny the existence of God, the cause remains. And there's no question of liberation. Now, Prabhupada is paraphrasing her question. This is the last part of her question. It's a summary. Devahuti, very intelligently, says, quote, "One may theoretically analyze and say that by knowledge he has become free. But actually, as long as one, as the cause exists, he is not free. Bhagavad Gita confirms that after performing such speculative activities for many, many births, when one actually comes to his real consciousness and surrenders to the Supreme Lord, Krishna, then the fulfillment of his research and knowledge is actually achieved. There's a gulf of difference between theoretical freedom and actual freedom from material bondage." And then he ends by saying, he quotes a verse from Lord Brahma's prayers to Krishna, 10th canto, chapter 14. After the stealing of the calves and the cowherd boys and having Krishna do what Krishna did, he comes before Krishna and offers prayers, and one of them is, "If one gives up the auspicious path of devotional service and simply tries to know things by speculation, one wastes his valuable time. Pishyanti, ye, kevala bhota labhyate, labdhaye. The result of such labor of bhava is simply labor. There is no other result. The labor of speculation is ended only by exhaustion." The example is given that there is no benefit in husking the skin of an empty paddy. The rice is already gone. Similarly, simply by the speculative process, one cannot be free from material bondage, but the cause still exists. One has to nullify the cause, and then the effect will be nullified. This is explained by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the following verses. From studying how this, when Kapila Dev speaks, Devahuti asks questions, the very first statement that he makes is a summary. And then everything after that initial summary is embellishment of that summary. So this is the important verse of the section of verses, whole series, because he's going to be explaining devotional service. Chapter 25 already explained devotional service. So nothing new in his teaching, but he's reiterating to connect this Sankhya, this analysis, with the process of bhakti. So he says, "One can get liberation by seriously discharging devotional service unto me and thereby hearing for a long time about me or from me. By thus executing one's prescribed duties, there will be no reaction and one will be free from the contamination of matter." The cause, the movements of matter and the living entity's implication in all of that because of the Sicha Dvesha situation, and not having a proper regard towards the Supreme Lord, having an attitude, wanting to be him, dismissing he doesn't even exist, and so forth. That has to be remedied. That's the cause. And when the cause is remedied, the result is remedied. Purport. Sridhar Swami has commented in this connection that by association with material nature alone, one does not become conditioned. not just being here is the problem, it's how we regard here, how we regard the face. And how we regard the place is an indication of how we regard the Supreme. It's His place. And therefore we should conduct ourselves accordingly. But if our regard towards Him is He doesn't exist, or I'm His competitor, then we'll behave differently. We'll become implicated. Conditional life begins only after one is infected by the modes of material nature. So it sounds like we can blame material nature. No. The modes of material nature act upon the living entity only when the living entity wishes to be the enjoyer of material nature. And if we don't wish to be the enjoyer of material nature, but wish to be enjoyed by Krishna in the position as His servant, the modes of nature subside. Earlier in the canto, very elaborate description. This is a conversation between Vidura and Maitreya. The very beginning of the canto, beautiful section. Krishna has left. He has just finished speaking Uddhava Gita to Uddhava. That detail doesn't come to the 11th canto, but he's spoken Uddhava Gita and Krishna has left. Uddhava knows, because Krishna told him, I'm leaving. My pastimes are finished. But he gave him some service. He said, I appeared in this world to give association to my dear devotees, and there's one group of devotees I didn't get the opportunity to give association to, the followers of Narayan Rishi in the north country. So I've just spoken Uddhava Gita to you. You take this message and deliver it to them, and in this way, as my representative, you will be giving my association, which is a nice understanding. You share Krishna's message to others, you're giving Krishna's association to others. Just the agent, or the, you know, the transmitter of His message. So, Krishna left. And shortly after Krishna left, Vidura comes. And this is quite unusual because it's in a forest. Just imagine walking through the forest and there is Uddhava. So this wonderful exchange, Uddhava, nice to see you here in the forest. And seeing Uddhava, Vidura thinks of Krishna. Because Uddhava is the dearmost associate of Krishna in Dwarka, and Vidura is accustomed to being in Hastinapur, and so he sees one of the dearmost associates of Krishna in Dwarka. He starts asking about Krishna and Balaram and Ugrasena and, you know, the whole group of Yadus by name. He mentions them. How is Krishna? Then there's three chapters where Uddhava just goes into this, launches into this absorption of thought in Krishna. Vidura hit his Krishna button. He just pours out this wonderful description. And which is so nice. Then when he finishes, it goes on all night long, because Krishna left in the day and Vidura comes in the evening, and he's talking all night long. And then he says, I have to go now. Krishna gave me some service this morning. but very nearby is Maitreya, because Maitreya was also hearing all of this description. And because Maitreya is my superior, you should hear from him anyways, superior in age. And he went that way. Just go that way and you'll find Maitreya. So Madhura went to find Maitreya. And when he found Maitreya, he asked many questions, and one of the questions he asked was about Krishna, specifically process of creation. That's where he starts his question. So there's chapters of describing the process of creation. It's one of the 10 topics of the Bhagavatam. So details, like so many details. When this process of creation, it starts with even before Lord Brahma is born, the creator, there's the what Lord Vishnu does for creation. Sarga, it's called in Sanskrit. So connect with this, that is the glance of Mahavishnu. There's many, many, many things that happened before that, but the glance of Mahavishnu, mentioned this yesterday. Living entities in time contact the Pradhan, and in contact with Pradhan, false ego manifests, but also the modes of nature become agitated. Now here's the picture. Here's living entities and the time energy and false ego. So it sounds like false ego is the culprit. The modes of nature are the culprit. It's the living entity, the message that we're hearing in this verse is the living entity desiring independent enjoyment of the culprit. The false ego just serves as an agent. And the modes of nature is this deluding potency to allow us to think we're Purusha. We're the enjoyer. In America, they have on the back of them, you have a different custom here or practice, but one of the things, at least for a while, was popular in America, people have bumper stickers. You know what that is? No. A little message, and there's like adhesive on the back. You pull the thing off, put the adhesive, and it's a bumper sticker. It sticks in your bumper, so people riding behind you read a little message. So one of them was a cartoon character looking at you saying, are we having fun yet? Bumper stick, very popular. Because the living entity wants to have fun and he's looking to his friend saying, are we having fun yet? I don't think we're having fun yet. Icha. But the companion of the Icha is Dvesha. That's the problem. Icha Dvesha Sambhutena Dvandva Mohina Bharata. Dvandva Moha. Moha is delusion, and Dvandva is duality. The duality of delusion. I desire to be Purusha, but there's a problem. I'm not. Somebody else is. So I have dvesha towards he who is, and I have strong desire to be Purusha. That's the problem. That's the root. And when you address the cause, then the result of the cause is addressed. So how do you address the cause? Well, you regard he who is Purusha properly. And as far as desire is concerned, desire to bring the energy of the Supreme to the Supreme in such a manner that is pleasing to Him. And what's pleasing to Him is love. So there's the solution. Cause is gone. And the consequence, the result of the cause is gone. Implication matter is finished. Small thing. Prabhupada goes on, if someone is in contact with the police department, that does not mean that he's a criminal. As long as one does not commit criminal acts, even though there is a police department, he's not punished. Similarly, the living, the liberated soul is not affected, although he is in the material nature. So her question is, if the cause is still there, isn't there, we're still in the game? No. If the cause can still be there, but the cause is triggered, or launched, or, is activated upon us because of rebellious spirit, correct that problem. And then, like being, where there's believing the police are protecting a law-abiding citizen. Be a law-abiding citizen. Even the Supreme Personality of Godhead is supposed to be in association with material nature when he descends, but he is not affected. One has to act in such a way that, in spite of being in the material nature, he is not affected by contamination. Then gives this example, metaphor. Although the lotus flower is in the association of water, it does not mix with the water. Common example. Portraying transcendental life. Be like the lotus. Because the stem of the lotus grows above the surface of the water. And so there may be even a storm, and the water is splashing around, but the lotus is not affected. That is how one has to live. As described by the Personality of Godhead, Kapila Deva, in this verse. And Prabhupada quotes the Sanskrit. Animitta Nimitena. Nimitta? What's the meaning of Nimitta?
Instrument.
Animitena. Nimitta? Animitena. It's, Prabhupada is translated word for word as without desiring the fruits of activities. So the activity of a fruitive worker is to get something. So the activity is the instrument to get something. But when you do activity without trying to get something. What's that? It's, who does something without trying to get something? I mean, whatever, you walk across the floor, you go from one side of the room to the other side of the room because you want something. A life of devotion is where there is a desire, but the desire is to please the Supreme Lord, and when the desire is to please the Supreme Lord, it's not that, in its essence, is not a fruitive desire. One is animita, nimitena. Of the several paragraphs I don't think of which to read them all, I'll read the next one and summarize. One can be liberated from all adverse circumstances simply by engaging seriously in devotional service. How this devotional service develops and becomes mature is explained here. That's the following verses. So he's now, the first is this principle. And then how it progresses step by step is coming. In the beginning, one has to perform his prescribed duties with a clean mind. I guess we're disqualified. Because mind is the repository of desires. We have desires. So we haven't even begun devotional service according to this. Clean consciousness means Krishna consciousness. One has to perform his prescribed duties in Krishna consciousness. And the answer to that, response to that is, if we're striving bhakti, according to Rupa Goswami's definition and nectar of devotion, or bhakti or samyutta sindhu, is even you're cultivating anushilana, Anukodina Krishna Anushilana. Even your kalpit, you may not be there yet, clean consciousness. But actively cultivating as something like Namabhas. Namabhas? There's offensive, clearing, pure. So in the clearing stage, one is striving to overcome the contaminations of heart through the medium of the holy name. And that's counted as devotional service. Even you're just practicing. Sadhana is part of the sadhana bhakti is a part of the topic of nectar devotion. And nectar devotion is about bhakti. So even you're practicing, it counts as devotional service. It's not the mature stage, but it's the beginning stage. Striving for purity. There is no necessity of changing one's prescribed duties. One simply has to act in Krishna consciousness. In discharging Krishna conscious duties, one should determine whether, by his professional or occupational duties, Krishna is being satisfied. In another place in the Bhagavatam it is said, Svanus Tatasya Dharmasya. What's the rest? Samsidhir, Haditosha. Everyone has to perform some prescribed duties, but the perfection of such duties will be reached only if the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari is satisfied by such action. For example, Arjuna's fighting. Not just go and fight and you please Krishna, but what is dharma yudha, what is religious activity. Then, so similarly, not just doing something, but prescribed and submissive to the prescription and performing for the pleasure of Hari. That's the bhakti principle, for the pleasure of Hari, for the pleasure of Krishna. Then modes of nature, influence, and the tendency for false ego, the intended enjoyer principle, subsides. One gets released from the implication of matter. And again, it says the same, next paragraph. If one wants to perfect his life, he should discharge his prescribed duties for the satisfaction of Krishna. One must act in Krishna consciousness, for such action will never produce any reaction. Anyamita nimitena. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Yagnartha karmano nyatra. All activities should be performed simply for yajna, for the satisfaction of Vishnu. Anything done otherwise without the satisfaction of Vishnu or yajna produces bondage. So here it is also prescribed by Kapila Muni that one can transcend material entanglement by acting in Krishna consciousness, which means seriously engaging in devotional service. This serious devotional service can be developed by hearing for long periods of time just in Mayapur, and when I left, it was the fifth day of the Kirtan Nila, and they have kirtans that go on, like intense kirtans, starting in the afternoon after lunch, and just, you know, going on into the night. Amazing kirtan performers. And day after day, so like that, or other forms of hearing during the narration of Srimad Bhagavatam. Regular hearing. And over a period of time, then that the influences of the modes of nature subside. The action, it's all activating the attraction for Krishna. And as the attraction for Krishna grows, then this other subsides. That's the method. In the beginning, it's sadhana. You do it because it's to be done. And gradually, as that purification takes place, one spontaneously is attracted. One should associate with devotees and hear from them about the Lord's transcendental appearance, activities, disappearance, instructions, etc. And he repeats the same message in the final paragraph. So that's the principle of even there's this long historical tendency, so long we can't even remember how long, but the tendency of living in the divinity involved, it can change. The power of the items of bhakti, shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam, the power of them is so great, then very quickly. Didn't happen quickly. So something that's been going on for a long, long, long time to change it, takes some time. But the process is so potent, it can happen very quickly. Okay, so I'll end there, see if there's any comments or discussion.
Arjuna's are caught in this. God is there, a living entity is not playing.
Yes.
Both of these are four defects. There are four defects here, the propensity to cheat others, if they answer. And then the propensity to cheat others. So, the propensity is there inside. And it takes time. So, technically, it's sometimes it over internally. So, say, it's natural process or depending upon the brain consciousness and how. The question is that.
I got the preface, I'm not getting what the question is.
So when one is sure that the cause is gone, sometimes it appears that cause is gone, but the situation which is gone.
Yeah. So you want to know, how do we know when the cause is gone? Well, there are different ways to respond. One comes in this section of the Bhagavatam. Devahuti asks another question. She says to Himadev, bhakti is pure. Is it possible that bhakti can be mixed? Because bhakti is pure. And Kapila Dev says, yes, bhakti is pure, and bhakti can be mixed with the modes of nature. Then he outlines bhakti that's mixed with mode of ignorance, mode of passion, mode of goodness. And the mode of goodness, without reviewing all of them, mode of goodness is when one performs activities for either one of two reasons. It will purify my existence. So I perform devotional service because it will purify my existence. So that's the impetus. It's a mode of goodness impetus. And the mode of goodness means there's still the lower modes are there's subordinate, but they're still there. And they, from time to time, they act. They take precedent. Or because it is to be done. Devotional service is to be done. Just like, you know, you don't steal. Why don't we steal? Because you don't steal. It's wrong. You don't steal. So that can, a person in the mode of goodness, it checks them from stealing. Or speak the truth. Speak the truth because you should speak the truth. The way to live. Don't tell lies. Speak the truth. But it's transcendence that when the cause is completely gone, Kapiladeva says, the symptom of the cause is completely gone, transcendental symptom is when there's narration of the topics of the personality of Godhead, one's mind spontaneously goes there. Gives the example like the Ganges during the rainy season. You don't have to tell the Ganges, okay, flow downstream. Flowing downstream very fast. So in the mode of goodness, I may try to keep my mind focused upon the holy name when chanting. I'm striving to do that. Really striving to do that. In the transcendental position, as soon as the sound of Krishna's name is there, like an example that comes to mind is Pundarik Vidyanidhi, when he heard this beautiful verse spoken by or sung by Gadadhar, Yukunda, he went into ecstasy just hearing that verse. Although externally it looked like he was a worldly man, just hearing the mind went. So that's when the cause is gone. Attachment to Krishna is so strong that a little reminder, Radharani sees clouds in the sky. She's reminded of Krishna. Her mind is close to Krishna. The cause is gone. So with that positive, then you can say conversely, the unwanted negative is also gone on the strength of the positive. In stages of bhakti, when one comes to the nishtha stage, it's still not, you know, the prema stage, and not the bhava stage, and not the other two, asakti and ruchi. But in the nishtha stage, bhakti is so strong that even there are residual elements, that bhakti is so strong they can't act. But when it's completely gone, is at the prema stage. But even before that, in the nishtha, without exception, one is fixed in devotional service. And that means that, you know, the mind has gone to Krishna and doesn't go somewhere else spontaneously. But Narayana Swami was narrating this pastime of Prabhupada, or exchange with Prabhupada, where they were in Detroit, and every morning taking Prabhupada to go to a park where he could go for his morning walk. They were passing by a whole bunch of stores, and Prabhupada was looking out the window and said, "Ah, this is Mahaprabhu. We were wondering, there's this bunch of stores." And then the same thing the next morning, the same thing the next morning, the same thing the next morning. So finally somebody asked Prabhupada, "What is it that you're seeing?" "This is Mahaprabhu." And he pointed to a sign, which it was a hardware store in America. They sold paint. And one of the brands of paint they sold was Sherman Williams brand of paint. And their logo is this can of paint tilted on its side and the paint coming out and pouring all over a globe. This is Lord Chaitanya. This is Mahaprabhu. Giving his mercy to cover the world. Because it says, cover the world. We cover the world. Ah, this is Mahaprabhu. So even seeing something worldly, he's seeing in relation to Krishna, or merciful Mahaprabhu, or, you know, things like that. Everything. And it can be very simple to remembering in Los Angeles, probably called it as Western World Headquarters. It's in the city of Los Angeles, but it's in a kind of residential area. So they would sometimes go for a walk in the residential area. And one morning, Sensor Marsh told me this, Prabhupada was walking, the devotees were following behind, and he saw in the lawn there was a metal thing sticking up and water running out like a tap. So he stopped and went over and turned the water off and went back on the sidewalk, because it's Krishna's energy, it should be wisdom. Even simple things, but seeing in relation to Krishna. Seeing everything in relation to Krishna. And there's so many nice examples of that. In the life of one who's the cause is gone, is seeing in relation to Krishna because of attachment to Krishna.
I'm confused about the difference between the discontinuities of Vishnu Yogis and the significance of Krishna Yogis for the person in Kaliyuga like us. You were explaining how the occupation duty should be done.
How the what?
Occupation duty should be done as a blessing.
Okay, how the occupation duty is to be done.
As a service of Krishna.
Yeah.
But the occupation duty itself is like I'm doing Vishnu right now. It is.
You can't put it together. That's the question. Yes, that's the question.
What's the definition of occupation duty and prescribed duty?
How do you do it, practically speaking, is your question. Yes? That's a challenge. The challenge of people who work in the world. It's a common question. It's one of the top questions to ask all the time. You take the theory and then put it into practice in day-to-day life. I can describe, I'm very familiar with answering this question. I'll just say a few things that are principle-based. One of the most obvious how-to items is how to see the paycheck, because that's the fruit of your work. So practice seeing the fruit of your work, the paycheck. What does it represent? It belongs to Krishna. So now, how do I utilize this? And the answer should be, I use it in Krishna's service. Doesn't mean I just go, whatever, every paycheck I get, I put into hundi. And then, that's devotional service to Krishna. There's other things that are also devotional service to Krishna. And as I stand to go to the market to buy some vegetables, or I pay my rent, or pay the utility bill, or whatever it is, it's for service to Krishna. So that means I should only buy those things that can be offered to Krishna. And the place where I live should be for Krishna's service only. And, you know, when I have my mobile phone and I pay the monthly bill, it's the phone is being used in Krishna's service. And then there may be some discretionary funds at the end, so let me see how I can use that in Krishna's service. So it's a very practical way, because it connects with all the activities that you do other than when you're at the place of work. So I'm at the place of work to do Krishna's service, and the fruits of that is connected to the paycheck. That's the beginning part. Then another is how you perform your chanting in the morning and your evening devotional activities as well. The purpose of them is to awaken a desire to serve Krishna. It's to awaken a desire to serve Krishna that's dormant within the heart. So it's sprouting, awakening that. So to the degree that you can do that nicely, you'll carry that consciousness with you into the workplace. So, here I am, I finished my sadhana, and after breakfast I'm going to go to work. And so I'm carrying some devotion for Krishna in my heart, and maybe there's another person or persons in the workplace, commonly not. So what is my service in relation to those persons? Well, one service is, I have to be an example. They may or may not have read Bhagavad Gita, but most likely they haven't understood it. So they're not going to sit and listen to me give a Bhagavad Gita class every day, but they can observe me living a life of devotion to Krishna. I may Prambulatory Bhagavad Gita class, my life in the workplace, is to teach other people by example. So it's something that's inside, and that which is inside comes outside, always. So that which is inside, this careful attention to your morning devotional practices, has awakened the inside, and you do that outside, at least in terms of what you do and what you won't do, what you'll say, what you won't say, what you'll eat, what you won't eat, and you know how you behave and your control of your mind. And you know, I won't get into the politics that go on in the workplace, the blaming and name calling when things don't go right, and I'm just not going to do that. And etc. 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 At some point, somebody in the workplace is going to have a stressful situation in their life. Guaranteed. They may, and this happens often with devotees, they come to that person who they see as a spiritual person. They're very calm, they're very balanced, and just think, you know, it's natural, they pour it out. I've got this, you know, they're just sharing. And that gives you an opportunity then to give some transcendental knowledge, measuring. Again, you don't necessarily give the Bhagavad Gita class, but you can give transcendental knowledge. says a service in the workplace. And you can just expand. Krishna will give you intelligence, each one of us. Our personalities are different, our natures are different. Super Soul will guide us accordingly, how to be his instrument. And it's not like you fail unless everybody in the workplace, becomes sadhakas. That's not failure. That's not a realistic expectation. But the bhakti that you're carrying has somehow, in some fashion, differently according to the people in the workplace, has affected them, has lifted them. Not you, it's the bhakti that you're carrying, that you receive, and you're carrying it, and you're cultivating it, and it will impact on the lives of others. A sannyasi, I'm not going to get to meet those people in the workplace. And he isn't either. But you are. And so you can be the conduit or the instrument in the tub for Krishna to touch the hearts and the lives of those people, even if it's this much. And many, many times I've asked people how to start with Krishna consciousness. Well, somebody in the workplace. And then the story goes in different ways. They gave me a book, or I saw a picture, or I heard kirtan playing at their workstation, or something. So if you're mindful, Krishna, please give me the opportunity. Krishna will give me the opportunity. You can be Krishna conscious in the workplace. So you're doing your work and you're thinking, how can Krishna bring more? And the scene grows and matures. Your skill and your ability and the inspiration and the empowerment and everything will grow as your bhakti matures. It happens in a very natural way. For all of you can imagine all the members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness to go to the workplace. There gotta be some way to do it. And there is. And those persons are able to impact the spiritual well-being of other people in the workplace.
Okay, should we go on the sessions?